the Rugby Union Podcast.
Welcome to William Hill's Rugby Union Podcast. I'm Michael Casey, and looking forward to the final weekend of autumn international action. We've got two fantastic games as England take on Australia and Wales take on South Africa. I'm delighted to say that join me on the line to discuss all the best bets and action is former England prop forward Jeff Probyn. Jeff, how are you getting on?
I'm very well. I've enjoyed the autumn so far, but this weekend is really the crunch time. It's certainly the crunch time for England and Australia. Face each other in that World Cup pool in a year's time. This is the last chance really to grab the bragging rights, and it's a crucial game.
Yeah, it is. I think you're completely right. But how much importance do we have to put on this one for England? Because I think if we looked at England's autumn international campaign before it started, they'd look at the games, and I think if we're being brutally honest, whilst no one would ever expect any team really to go into a game against the All Blacks and win, it certainly wouldn't be an expectation, even if they held out faint hopes. I think the game against South Africa was one that the England side really wanted to win. The game against Samoa last week was a must win. It would have been a real shock if they didn't. And if they essentially lose all three games against the big three Southern Hemisphere sides, it really will leave them in a bad place. And as you say, in the same group as Australia when the World Cup rolls around next year. So would you say it's kind of a must win for Stuart Lancaster's men?
I think it is. I think the reality is that they would have wanted a 3-1 autumn. You know, all right, you expect that the All Blacks are there or thereabouts. You wanted to push them close, which they did. South Africa are a side that play rugby that England can cope with far better than they can the South African game. So England would have wanted to have won that South African game and be truly disappointed they didn't. We always knew they were going to beat Samoa. The interesting thing is with Australia is the keeping of Fuld. You know, has Lancaster made the right choice? We don't know. We saw Fuld play well against Samoa last week, but Australia are a completely different side. They're a Tier 1 team, Samoa are a Tier 2 team. It's going to be a bigger challenge for Fuld this week than it was last week. And you can bet your life that the Australians will run down his channel and put some pressure on him.
Well, let's jump straight into this England-Australia game. And the betting, 8-13, England are favourites. The draw's 18-1, Australia 7-5 outsider. There's a 3-point handicap, so minus 3 points off England's score is 10-11, plus 3, Australia 10-11 also. You mentioned the big change with Owen Farrell have been dropped. It's the first England side in 2 years that hasn't had Owen Farrell in the side. George Ford has been selected at 10, as you said, on the back of a decent performance, but against Samoa, no, you know, not against New Zealand, not against South Africa, against Samoa, he is one change. The other changes see Dylan Hartley back in at hooker and Tom Wood into the back row in place of James Haskell. I think you'd be honest, Rob Webber might consider himself a little bit unlucky. I think James Haskell would have had to have a superb performance to have kept his place on overall current form of Tom Wood. But what do you think about the halfback then, George Ford, and his selection against Australia, Jeff?
You know, I think, from my mind, it's too little too late. You know, you wanted Ford to have the experience of playing games against South Africa and against New Zealand going into this final game, if you were going to pick him. You know, if you were going to pick Ford for this, which we all knew that this was going to be the most vital game for England. We don't know if we're going to face South Africa or New Zealand in the World Cup, but we do know definitely that we are facing Australia. This game is about bragging rights. We get the bragging rights. If we win it, they get the bragging rights if they win it. Will it make a big difference? I couldn't say it would. It's possible to play games, lose heavily, and then go out and beat them. I mean, you look at the last World Cup, the World Cup in France, 2007, where England reached the final against South Africa. In the pool stages, they lost by 40 points. When it came to the final, it was a close-run thing that South Africa just won by 5 points. So there is going to be a judgment with this. We would like to win this because it would make the autumn far better in terms of what England's performance was. We've had a disappointing autumn, and really, England would have expected, as I say, to have won that game against South Africa. They'll be very, very disappointed they didn't. Areas of the game let them down. Ford coming back and playing as well as he did against Samoa wasn't unexpected. He's a talented player. Whether he can do it against one of the big teams, we'll find out on Saturday, but it may be too late. I think the reality is that we might see that Owen Farrell goes on early in the second half of this game. we know that this game is going to be very, very close. I think the book is obviously with their 3-point margin of saying that. The fact that Ireland have beat Australia, the fact that France have beat Australia has made England favourites. But, you know, this Australian side will want to go home, end their tour on a high note. This is going to be a harder game than the games that Ireland faced and that France faced. So I expect this to... I think England will win, but it's going to be bloody close.
Yeah, I think that you mentioned obviously the two defeats for Australia there, but we're talking about perspective and what this game will do to the sort of overall complexion of the autumn series. If Australia manage to win this, they've come up north and beaten their two main challenges in the World Cup for next week in wins over Wales and England as well. Just run through the couple of changes that Australia have made. Into the side comes McMahon at blindside flank. Rob Horn comes onto the wing with Speight switching onto the other wing. Ashley Cooper into midfield in place of Tavita Kuridrani with Israel Folau continuing at 15. So only a couple of changes to the Australia side that narrowly lost out to Ireland in what was a superb game, Jeff. It looked at one point as if it could have got very embarrassing for the Wallabies, but they came back and made a real fist of it, and Ireland maybe deserved winners overall at the end, but they certainly had to fight until the death.
Well, they do, and the Australians are a quality side in their back line. They've got some fantastic footballers. Henry Speight coming in has added a power also to that wing position. Ashley Cooper going into the midfield isn't a weakness. You know, he's a talented player. He's played there before. He understands the game. The big thing with the Australians is always the forwards, and everyone always says, you know, the Australians don't have a tight set five. They do all right. They're not bad. They always last in the championship. You know, they're playing against New Zealand and South Africa down there, and they survive quite well in that. Lots going to depend how the referee interprets the way that the Australian scrummage. I'm sure that Graham Rowntree will be whispering in the ear of the referee about what cheating Australians they are and how they always duck and dive. They do all right in the lineouts. They've got a good lineout play. So, you know, and the back row with Hooper as their captain, he's a true open side. There's a lot of people say that he's now overtaken Richie McCaw in terms of the best open side in the world. So it's going to be a major challenge for England in the loose as well. What we've got to do is control the set pieces, make sure that we dominate our lineout. One of the reasons Hartley's been brought back over Weber is Weber did have a few. Should we say, off-target throws in the line-out against Samoa. So we've got Hartley back because of his throwing. That should make the line-out an area that we're more capable of defending and even attacking the Australian line. So it's going to be nip and tuck. We should have dominance in the forwards. As long as we can retain that dominance in the forwards and not let the Australian backs run too much, we should do well. The kicking game that the Irish did against the Australians was a well-judged kicking game. One of the aspects about us is we mustn't kick as loosely as we have in the other two games, the games against South Africa and New Zealand, which enabled their players to run back at us. If we allow the Australian players that amount of space and that amount of time, they will score tries. They showed against Ireland that, you know, with the ball in hand, they are more than capable of scoring tries. We shouldn't give them that opportunity.
Okay then, Jeff, so let's go. Prediction time then. England -3 on the handicap at 10-11. You said you fancied a tight game, so I'd be looking towards the winning margin lives. 1-5 points England, 1-5 points Australia. The former mentioned bet there, England to win by 1-5 points is 4-1. It's 9-2 for Australia to win by the same margin. 6-10 points England, 5-1. 6-10 points Australia. And as I mentioned, the handicap -3 points.
I'll take the 4-1 for England.
The 4-1 that England win by 1-5 points. Well, Jeff, you're coming into this on pretty much a clean sweep from last week, so fingers crossed we can keep that run going. I'm going to add into the mix as a bet here as well, England to be leading by half time. It seems to be the case, one that Australia have started slowly in a couple of their fixtures this autumn so far, and that England have been put under kind of a bit of pressure sort of from that 60th to 70th minute. I've been looking at when they concede points seems to be a bit of a problem area for them. So England to be leading by the 40-minute break is 4-5 as well. Not sure if that's something that you could be tempted him by as well as the 1 to 5 points.
No, I think the reality is that if you look at England, they have started all the games well. The bookies always get these things right. You know, you look at it, the odds there that they're giving are not very good, and that's because England do start well. They have notoriously. It's a strange game. If you look at it, Australia have come good in the last 10 or 15 minutes of every game. England have got weak in the last 10 or 15 minutes of every game. So it's the combinations there are for what is going to be a very exciting game. I'm sure Stuart Lancaster would have spent all this week talking about making sure we learn how to close games out. England have put points on the board in their previous two games against the major nations, South Africa and New Zealand, but they haven't closed the games out. Against Australia, they need to close this game out because Australia will come back at them very, very hard towards the end of the game.
Okay, I'm fine. If I could press you for any potential try scores, the prices about the try scores are not live, but they'll be going live very shortly, I'd imagine. So any particular players that you fancy to go? Obviously, Johnny May's had a pretty superb autumn so far. Starts on the wing for England. Mike Brown, obviously, his international scoring record, very good. Henry Speight, on his second in Australian game, made an impact last week. Any of those or others that you might fancy for a try?
You got to go for Johnny May again because of he's a very good poacher as well. He's good at finding spaces and looking for them, and he's running off of his wing as well quite a bit. So he's there. I actually think that George Forge might sneak in.
Okay, yeah, he carries the ball quite well. Obviously, we saw the way he offloaded for the try last week against Samoa, took it to the line quite handily. So George Ford as an anytime try scorer is likely to be a reasonably generous price as well. So moving on to the other game of the afternoon, and Wales are absolutely friendless at 21-10 in the betting. It's 2-5 South Africa, and the handicap, Jeff, is a converted try at 7 points. Wales, of course, they've had a disappointing autumn. That's there's no secret about it. But they performed very, very well against New Zealand for a long time, but unfortunately faded pretty rapidly towards the end. The take on the South Africa side, Jeff, who are going to be hampered by having lost a lot of their overseas test contingent, given that this game falls outside of the international window. They make 5 changes. They've completely changed the back three, but they brought back Willie LaRue, Cornel Hendricks and Mavovo on the two wings. Bismack Duplessis moves back into hooker, and it's Matawira at loosehead completing the 5 changes for South Africa. Changes for Wales, I think, well, the big one and the big talking point is no George North. Of course, he is injured and out for this game. In his place, Liam Williams, a scarlet winger, comes into the side. Elsewhere, Gethin Jenkins, Scott Baldwin come into the 15 as well. How do you call this one? Do you think the bookies have got it right and that Wales are going to be beaten by a converted try or more? Or do you think it could be a bit closer, even give the Welsh a chance?
Well, I think the Welsh have got a chance. You know, everyone will be talking about George North, and he is a vital man in terms of their attack play. He's a big ball carrier and a good try scorer. But, you know, this Welsh side, they flatter to deceive. A lot of the time they produce some great rugby, and other times they look really dull. I mean, the game against Fiji was an awful game for the Welsh, only winning by a few points against a team that France had put 40 points on the week before. So, you know, they're a confusion. They play so well against New Zealand. If they can play with that intensity, there is a chance that they could come away with a win. The South Africans, despite the fact they've had these changes forced on them by the game falling outside the international window, are still a very physical side. We know how South Africa are going to play. They're going to run at you. There's going to be big guys carrying the ball, running at the Welsh defence. Sean Edwards has got that Welsh defence quite good. If they can make their tackles, they can put in their stuff. There is a chance of Wales to come through this game and win. If they can play with it, you know, Wales have got less disruption than the South Africa side. So in that sense, Wales have the better opportunity to win this game. It is at the Millennium. It's at the end of the season for South Africa, who realistically have overachieved this year from where they thought they'd be. Beating the All Blacks was a big thing for them. Wales could catch them on the hop, and I think that Wales could actually, I hate to say this being an Englishman, but I think they could actually sneak it and win it.
Well, the value is certainly there, Jeff. 21-10 if you fancy Wales on the outrights. And I mean, at the back of that logic, if you want to play it safe a little bit, give them a 7-point head start and you're getting a 10-11 price about them with a 7-point head start. We'll just move on to a couple of potential try scores for that one. I think that the 21-10 about Wales is too big. I have to agree with you there. I think I'd maybe be one erring on the side of caution and taking the plus 7 points just because of the wretched record that Wales seem to have against these Southern Hemisphere nations. But who would you fancy to getting over the line on Saturday, Jeff? Any particular try scorers?
Well, you've got to look at Liam Williams. He's coming into the side. It's his big opportunity. You know, if North was around, he'd be sitting on the bench, or maybe even sitting back in Newport with the Scarlets, you know. Mm. Leffley with the Scarlets, rather. This is his big chance. And he's got Jonathan Davis there with Jamie Roberts. Jonathan Davis is a great, great pair of hands. Always is looking to create space for his wingers and bring in his players. I see Liam Williams as a possible. Lee Halfpenny again, not really played much rugby for too long. He started playing now. He's getting himself involved. He's back home in Wales now, playing with his Welsh side. It's his chance to show something. So those two are an option for the Welsh side. For the South African side, as you said, Willie LaRue coming back in the side, fantastic player, great runner from the back. Hendricks has got a chance that he wouldn't normally have, you know, with Brian O'Banner around, so and Peterson around. So I'd put in Hendricks as well.
Yeah, Cornel Hendricks and Willie LaRue, in addition to Liam Williams. Those prices will be live on the in-play William Hill website very shortly. Finally, Jeff, as it is the final weekend of international fixtures, the next time we'll get a chance to look at the home nations will be in the Six Nations. So I want you to cast your eye forward a little bit and just on the back of what you've seen this autumn, have a little pick for the Six Nations. England 15-8 favourites, Ireland second favourites at 2-1, Wales 3-1, France 11-2, and well, the rest don't really bear talking about. Scotland 25-1, and Italy 250-1. Sorry, any Scottish and Italian listeners we have.
We should hold our breath with the Scots a bit, you know.
They've had
a good autumn. You've got to give them their due, you know. It was a second string New Zealand side, but they did push them all the way. They've won their other two games up there. The Scots have got a bit of a roll. Cotter's certainly improved their spirit, should we say, from where they were even last year. And Vern Cotter's got them playing some decent rugby. Glasgow are doing well.
Yeah, but Jeff, you're not telling me you'd bat them at 25-1 to win the Six Nations.
No, but you know, come on, you've got to talk them up. Ireland's the side for me to look at. You look at the way that Ireland are playing, and the fact that Schmidt has integrated the new players so well. You know, you lose a player like Brian O'Driscoll, and yet your midfield still performs well enough to beat two of the Southern Hemisphere giants. You know, they're beating Australia, they're beating South Africa. They performed at a level that the rest of us in the Northern Hemisphere will look at and say, that's what we want to achieve. So the Irish have set the benchmark. England, yeah, we've got two of our games at home this year, with France and Italy. We're playing Ireland away, I think. Ireland and Wales away.
Yeah, Ireland in Dublin.
Yeah, so it's a brave man that says that England will beat Ireland in Wales in Dublin and Wales in Cardiff. You know, we'll be there and thereabouts. From an England point of view, my heart says yes. England need to win this Six Nations going into the World Cup. This is the Six Nations that they need to win, and not only win but also Grand Slam. This is what your heart says. This is what England 2003 did. They won the Grand Slam going into the World Cup that year. England should try to emulate that and win a Grand Slam this year. My head says that the way that Ireland are playing and the fact that it's in Dublin, the way that Wales are playing and the fact that it's in Cardiff, makes it a hard journey for England. England will need to be really 100% on their sorts. If I was going to be an outside better, I'd stick a tenner on Ireland to win the championship again.
I think I'd match it with my own tenner there, Jeff. I think I've been very, very impressed by the Irish. And really looking to the future, final comment of the podcast. New Zealand are 11-8 to lift the World Cup next September, or it'll be October, won't it, by the time the finals roll around. Is that a good bet, or would you look elsewhere, Jeff?
I think think I'd look elsewhere. I think that New Zealand are slightly dipping in their form. You know, they're unbeaten, but they've been pushed close a couple of times. They have had that loss against South Africa. South Africa are not an answer. I don't think, in all honesty, that this World Cup is cut and dried at this moment in time. You know, there is a great saying that New Zealand have been the favourites in every World Cup since they started in 1987. The only time they've not been the number one team in the world was in 2003. But in all previous World Cups, they've been there. But they have rather emulated the teabag in the other World Cups. There's the old joke, you know, what's the difference between New Zealand and a teabag? A teabag stays in the cup longer.
Very good. So on that note then, England are going to win the World Cup at 100-30. Is that the bet?
Well, I might put a fiver on that.
We'll end it there. Thank you very much, Jeff.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.